You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are the superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. Again, we took last week off, and we're happy to be back this week to chat about John Cena, Kelly Kelly, King Mo, Bound for Glory, good old Jim Ross, and much more. My name is David, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend Alex. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. ESPN Films 30 for 30 just started back up. The NBA season's about to begin. Major League Baseball playoffs are about to begin, and we're in the middle of the football season. It's a good time right now.
It is a good time, and again, it's nice to be back on the air with you. We had kind of a little mini vacation last week because we were both really swamped with work, and I just hate when real life jobs get in the way of fun things like wrestling.
You know? I could see what you mean.
But to your point, it is a really fun time of year with the baseball playoffs. I'm glad you mentioned the 30 for 30s. I love those documentaries on ESPN. Do you try to watch all of them?
Yeah, and then I own season one on DVD. And then about the baseball playoffs, I can't help but mention that Miguel Cabrera, first Triple Crown winner since 67?
Since 1967, that's right. A Boston Red Sox, unfortunately. I'm a Red Sox fan. Carl Yastrzemski was the last one. And so, I was a little sad in that regard. I always liked the fact that they would go back and talk about Yaz when they were talking about the Triple Crown. But Cabrera's a great story. Give me your baseball predictions. Who do you like in the World Series?
Oh, man, right now things are just heating up. You know, I kind of want to see the Nationals make it, but it'll be definitely an interesting year. But I'm pulling for the Nationals this year.
Well, I live in D.C., so that would be very exciting. If they played the Orioles, that would be incredible. I'd have to try to go to a game, wouldn't I? I've never been to the World Series. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember last year Philadelphia would have made it in. I think my wife and I would have traveled up north and tried to win to a game. It's neat when you can go to big events like that.
Right, and of course, as a Red Sox fan, we're still making headlines because we fired Bobby Valentine today. So not quite as exciting as what these playoff teams are preparing for, but nevertheless, big news. So, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss today, Alex. What do you think? Should we get started?
Yeah, let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. It's pretty obvious the WWE has no idea when John Cena is coming back from elbow surgery. If he can't compete at Hell in a Cell, what really is Plan B? Well, Alex, I think that all the hate that John Cena gets, we're seeing a little bit now when he's not involved, when he's not on Monday Night Raw every week, and he's not headlining a major upcoming pay-per-view. There's a bit of a void. The roster does have some depth issues. Are you missing Cena, or are you looking at this like an opportunity for someone else to step up?
And that was exactly what I'm going to say. All the reports that I read online is that John Cena will compete at Hell in a Cell. The thing is that I think the office and the doctor had a conflict of how long they wanted John Cena to stay out. Fact is, John Cena is very underrated when it comes to the fact that he's almost an Iron Man. I mean, he's been out a couple times with injury, but he's a little bit tougher than most, a little bit less breakable than most. He's gone a long time without being injured. He injured his elbow, and apparently when Dr. James Andrews, the famous sports doctor, went in there, apparently it was a little bit more messed up than what they had first considered. But Cena will make the pay-per-view. But, I mean, CM Punk this past Monday on Monday Night Raw, the show was running long. The Jim Ross, CM Punk segment was supposed to be out there at 10 o'clock. It came in a little bit late. But it did monster ratings, David. So it's very interesting that the Sheamus Damian Sandow match was still in the ring at 10 o'clock. And normally they want to have the start of the big segment coming up at 10 o'clock to be in the ring.
Yep.
But people still found that segment. They tuned in. And we've definitely, I think, seen a rise of CM Punk per se. I mean, since Paul Heyman's joined him, I think he's grown to a new level.
I think that's fair. Did you get a chance to watch Main Event on Wednesday night, his match with Sheamus?
I watched about 5 minutes of it. No, I've not been able to watch it yet.
I got to tell you, I thought it was a pretty good match. I enjoyed it. They really let those guys breathe. It was a very long match as far as TV goes. And I've started to really, really like CM Punk. Not so much, and I've always respected his talent, but I like him as a main character. I like when the storylines revolve around him much more so than someone like Randy Orton or Big Show. I'm just kind of ready to move on from those guys. But my question, Alex, is why do you think they're doing so much with the fact that Punk has to face Cena again? They keep saying, Punk, to get that respect, you have to face Cena because he's faced him and he's beaten him many times.
I think you're 100% correct about that. Unfortunately, it goes back to what you said about the depth and the talent roster. They've positioned guys. They can't headline a pay-per-view with CM Punk, notably. Well, I was going to say a Hell in a Cell, but I guess Hell in a Cell, unfortunately, is a B-show, which was always, whenever they put a Hell in a Cell on the show, it was a bigger show. But, I mean, could you imagine Zack Ryder or even Randy Orton at this point headlining the show with him? No. And plus, CM Punk and John Cena are factored in to be big parts of WrestleMania. So I guess it's kind of good you keep them on top here in October.
Recently, Kelly Kelly left the WWE. What does this mean for the Divas division, and does anybody really care? Well, Alex, as you know, I've been a fan of the Divas for a while, and you always run into the issue of, are they models, are they wrestlers? And really, the truth is somewhere in between. There's been models who have wrestled and wrestlers who have, you know, have had to do some modeling for them because of what they asked their Divas to do. But this was a real shock to me. I know the Divas division's been hit hard over the past year plus, losing Mickie James, losing Michelle McCool, Gail Kim. They've lost some real talent, Melina, again, being one of those. But losing Kelly Kelly, I thought, was very, very, very interesting because, to me, she's the face of what they want this division to be. People actually do seem to root and care for her. She can evoke emotion. Is this something the Diva division can recover from? Is it a non-story? What do you think about Kelly Kelly leaving WWE?
When I saw this question, I kind of immediately also put it together with the fact that Sarah Del Rey was hired as a trainer for Florida Championship Wrestling, which, I mean, it's kind of evident, I guess, she'll be assisting with the training of the females, which that's another conversation I'm very into having because I don't know. Sarah Del Rey was a very interesting hire to me for that position. But just speaking specifically about Kelly Kelly, I mean, it's a huge blow to the company because not only to the Divas division, because it's showing people that, you know, if you want to pursue projects on your own, World Wrestling Entertainment will not open the doors to you in that way, and you'll have to leave if you want to do it. And now people aren't afraid to leave. Recently, there was an impasse with negotiations with Chris Jericho for that same reason.
Yeah.
Jericho says he wants to come back, from what I understand, in between tours, in between concert dates, try to get some time in, and they want to be able to control his outside jobs, and he doesn't want to let that go.
I read that about Chris Jericho, and I think it does apply here with Kelly Kelly. So I want to ask you, why is we as wrestling fans, do we care if they do things outside of WWE? In other words, why is Vince, so why does he stress that so much that they have to be WWE first? If Kelly went on to the calendar or did some modeling or did some acting, we'd all associate her with WWE anyway, wouldn't you? I mean, what is the problem with doing these other entertainment ventures?
Part of the things that I heard is that she wanted to take, in 2012, which may not be that racy pics, but I mean some swimsuit pictures, for example, which is not currently along the lines of what the company wants the message to be put out. I mean, it goes both ways, David. She's WWE Diva Kelly Kelly, and she's also WWE Diva Kelly Kelly. I mean, she represents the company as much as the company represents her, and it's a mixed bag. I mean, I can kind of see it from both sides.
Tensai lost again this week on national television. It is clear that this character has been a colossal failure. Who shoulders the blame for this, Alex?
Probably a combination. I mean, I would shoulder less of it on the talent because I think, Matt Bloom, there's not much he's going out there probably doing that's not approved by anyone else. I mean, his matches weren't the right type of matches when he first came in. What's interesting is that when Ryback first came in, I mean, those were the type of matches that Tensai needed to have. And Ryback is in a lot better position right now than Tensai is.
Mm-hmm.
But Tensai was supposed to be the bridge to the fall with the John Cena feud. And surprisingly, World Wrestling Entertainment was able to pull the John Laurinaitis storyline with John Cena out of their behind, and it got him through the summer and actually did pretty well for him. So, yeah, Tensai is a failure, but the company actually recovered pretty well from it. And they have a good piece of talent in Matt Bloom.
I agree they have a nice piece of talent, but I got to tell you, I think he's kind of weird looking with all the tattoos, and he wears like those little mini tights, and you know, it's kind of a strange shape to his body, and I don't know, there's nothing like real pleasing about him, and I think some of his wrestling is kind of clunky. I think his finishing move is stupid, where he kind of like falls, like, what were they, like back flat flops on a guy, or that there's a lot to me that just missed with this character, and you're right. I just felt the other thing, too, Alex, was the timing of his return was so bizarre right after WrestleMania 28 when there was just enough other things going on. They didn't need to do it at that time. And why bring Brock back and bring him back basically in the same show? And it just everything felt off about this. Now, the question, if you're in the board meetings, are do we let this guy go or do we try to repackage him and try to move forward with him in a way that can work? Because you and I have talked about this. The kid, you know, he can work.
I mean, this was probably the most impactful debut the night after WrestleMania, probably since Brock Lesnar debuted. I mean, someone will correct me about that. But, I mean, that was the last big one I remember is when Brock Lesnar debuted the night after WrestleMania, even though this wasn't Tensai's debut either. I mean, the fact is that, yeah, I think they knew a lot of people would be watching, and they wanted to bring this character out strong because, like I said, I mean, he was supposed to be the bridge to the fall, where he was supposed to work with John Cena all summer. This may have been like his twilight run or whatever, you know, making the last amount of real big money before he moves on to something else or whatever. I like the signing. And like I said, they have a good piece of talent on their hands. So on SmackDown, when Ryback actually gave him the slam, it got over huge, but unfortunately they weren't able to hit that move on Raw.
Right.
But he could be used as a piece of talent to get other guys over.
Especially wear different wrestling gear. And real quick before we move on, there's apparently rumors, too, that maybe even the Funkasaurus, Brodus Clay, you know, they may have to repackage him here. Vince isn't real high on his character. Wrestling is such a strange beast. A month ago, I thought the Funkasaurus was great. You know, I'm teaching my kids how to, you know, somebody call your mama, dance around the house, and thinking about buying the T-shirt. A month later, like, maybe we'll do something different with him. So who knows?
TNA Wrestling. David, do you know who King Mo is?
I do. I know a little bit about him, yeah.
Yesterday he did a conference call with Spike TV, and they kind of introduced him to, the wrestling media world because the guy's coming from mixed martial arts, and he wasn't a mixed martial artist like Brock Lesnar, who was a successful pay-per-view headliner. His fights were on the second brand, Strikeforce, and actually only on Showtime. He had one CBS fight against Gegard Mousasi a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like TNA has really done enough to introduce him on television. As we record this, actually, King Mo debuts tonight on the TNA television.
Right.
He's going to be a special guest enforcer at the October pay-per-view Bound for Glory. But it seems like TNA knew when they signed the guy, and they did. You know, they did video packages when they signed them, but it seems like they could have done a little bit more. For people like you, David, and for people who aren't familiar with this character, to kind of introduce you to him all these weeks in building to this moment.
Well, first of all, I think it's nice that he's on the Bound for Glory show. I mean, do we expect too much from these debuts? I mean, he is going to be a special enforcer in a big match and on an important pay-per-view. So I think that's fair. I find it very interesting that there's this MMA professional wrestling bridge, though. You know, of course, with Brock Lesnar and King Mo and you know, some others. So I think, of course, it's a natural transition in a way, but he's legit, former college champion, MMA star. Don't you think if they do use him right, we could debate on how that would be done, that he could really be a player for them?
Sure, potentially. I mean, this is uncharted water in America to have someone who's an active professional wrestler and active mixed martial arts fighter. Now
right.
Now he's doing it both for the tertiary brand in mixed martial arts and for the secondary brand in pro wrestling. So it's not going to – it may get some media attention. It definitely got some last night. I mean, some MMA sites actually called in on a conference call. But, David, it's more along the lines of, for example, recently Target's done a promotion where they're incorporating different shops from around the country, and they're selling some of their products actually in their store. And I was very unfamiliar with this promotion until my wife told me about it, and I kind of understood the point. But then I saw a commercial about it, David, and I kind of got it. And I was kind of a little bit more interested to see specifically what they sold from each of these shops from across the country. It's the fact that, you know, we're unfamiliar with King Muhammad Lawal, and you expect the wrestling company in this case to kind of get you a little bit more familiar with who he is and what to expect and why this guy is important enough to be in this position. It's like when Ken Shamrock refereed the match at WrestleMania 13 between Austin and Bret Hart. You know, they called him the world's most dangerous man. They showed UFC clips on television, which is actually funny because that's what got me into UFC. I mean, I knew who this guy was before he came in, before I'd only heard of him.
Real quick before we move on, Are they assuming people know because of social media and Facebook and YouTube and everything, and that they shouldn't assume as much?
Absolutely. Yeah. You brought up last night the WWE main event show on ION, and they opened up the show by showing a video package on who CM Punk is. They assumed you didn't know who their world champion was, and I think anytime you assume that someone is unfamiliar with it, it can only lead to good things. Show video packages. Tell people who people are. Show people why people are upset with each other. You know, there's overuse of it, but then there's proper use of it to where, I mean, you want to hopefully have a new fan base every week and let them know what's going on, especially to someone like Mo who's new. TNA has signed a big three-way for the belt at Bound for Glory. This will be a good showcase for the tag team division. What's interesting, David, is that right now both wrestling companies are kind of making a priority of the tag team division.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, TNA Bound for Glory. Like I said, they have the World Tag Team Champions of the world, Chris Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. And I meant to do that because that's what they refer to themselves as, David, the World Tag Team Champions of the world. AJ Styles and Kurt Angle, and Hernandez and Chavo Guerrero Jr. And then on World Wrestling Entertainment right now, they're having a tag team title tournament who will challenge Kane and Daniel Bryan for the belts. You know, what's interesting is that we've talked before on this very show about how the tag team division's kind of been underutilized, sometimes by both companies. And I think both companies are doing an excellent job right now.
Well, I'm very romantic about tag team wrestling because when I grew up in the 80s, it was such a great part of WWF at the time. And, you know, so for me, I'm very romantic about it. I really like the fact, as you point out, both companies seem to be giving it more television time and keeping guys together. I like the tag team tournament in WWE, but I really like this three-way tag match at Bound for Glory. In fact, I think it's an overall good card coming up here in a little bit in October. You know, there's a women's match, there's a three-way match, we've got a special enforcer with King Mo. It's got some nice diversity to the card, I really like it. But this three-way bout we're talking about here, it should be a good showcase for the tag team division. I love the fact Chavo's in it, I've always liked Chavo, and I can't wait for this match. I like crazy tag team matches, more so than like Money in the Bank matches where it's, you know, every man for himself.
You know, normally you don't see the tag team titles defended every day in a three-way dance. I mean, you know, it probably happens very often, but, I mean, this is one of the I can't remember off the top of my head too many other three-way dance tag team matches that I've seen recently out of the major companies. I assume TNA's done some in the past year, but none come to mind. So the whole concept kind of seems kind of fresh, and all of these guys are good professional wrestlers. On top of the fact that when they're on television, they're good at building up whatever prospective matches are going to be in the future. Yeah, I think this is excellent. I'm a big fan of this, and it kind of makes the Bound for Glory card a little bit more well-rounded.
Right. Yes, exactly. What I find interesting about tag team wrestling, too, is there's so many different types of stories you can tell. And when companies don't use tag teams very often, I think they're missing out on that. I think, you know, there's just some really complex partnerships that you can have on your show and you know, in the rivalry. So I've always liked tag team wrestling, and I really look forward to this three-way. And again, for me personally, I like to see that Chavo is doing well in TNA and that he'll be a part of this.
You know, variety is the spice of life, and absolutely. I mean, the different ways that you could feature professional wrestling will keep fans interested. If you continue to serve vanilla ice cream, even as much as I love it, eventually I'll get bored with it. And it's good that they can utilize all of the things that make professional wrestling good and what it is. There's not been a clear bill for the X Division match coming up for Battle for Glory. Hulk Hogan was on the television a lot. Quite frankly, the last month he's been on a lot. What is Hulk Hogan's current worth to the company? David, this is one of the biggest professional wrestling stars ever. It is undeniable that having him on the roster means something. But David, at his advanced age, it feels like to me it can only be a detriment having him on your television every week featured prominently. David, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, this was the guy when we were growing up.
Oh, yeah. And there's a generation, though, who he's just a sideshow almost. They don't understand maybe what he meant to the World Wrestling Federation in the 80s and how he really put that company on his back. But I think folks like him, Ric Flair, can still be valuable, can still contribute. But if they're misused, Alex, I think it's time for them to go away. And this has been a case where I think he's been misused. I think Hulk Hogan can contribute to TNA. Because, as you mentioned, huge star, and if he would just be put in the right position or in the right storyline, why couldn't he help build a next star or build a great storyline? But I'm thinking that we need a little bit less and less and less of Hogan as it goes on here. He's become a sideshow outside the ring, too, with his family dramas and these weird ads with Troy Aikman for Rent-A-Center. And I don't see him on my TV and immediately think what he's doing is important, and that's kind of a shame.
Absolutely. Recently, Arnold Schwarzenegger has been doing a media tour, and actually last week, which was actually posted yesterday, he did an interview with Bill Simmons from ESPN.com. But Arnold is, you know, he's kind of that same, I guess a little bit before Hogan, but the kind of that same generation, the big 80s muscle guy, big guy, big figure, but Arnold's had his share of ups and downs. But I mean, you kind of look at Arnold as always being dignified and kind of still has that aura about him, but he doesn't overuse himself.
Right.
I mean, you don't see a new Arnold movie every week, and he's not trying to keep up with some of the action stars of this current era. As to where Hogan, it kind of feels like he's still trying to hold on a little bit. You know, let's face it, I mean, Hulk Hogan, yes, he sure can be used in the proper setting, but when you see him every week and then you hear the news of the back and how bad and broken it is, and I mean, you could say sometimes backstage stuff doesn't go into the ring or a lot of fans aren't aware, but David, I was in Philadelphia for last year's Bound for Glory, and when he took his first bump, I mean, the fans gasped. Because we had all heard of the stories, you know, about how he couldn't do that anymore. His back was shot. And the thing is that Hogan can be used there. He can be used well, and he's a legend, but they use him too much.
Wild card topic number one. Speaking of Hulk Hogan, recently Doink the Clown criticized him in a radio interview. Is Hogan just an easy target for everybody? Alex, I think that he is an easy target for people sitting on their couch doing radio interviews, and for someone like Doink the Clown to be so dismissive of Hogan's importance. And, well, you know, I'm not saying Hogan behind the scenes was the greatest guy and that he put everybody over, but people do seem to forget his impact and like to take shots at him. What do you think?
Actually, I was completely unaware of this, and I actually had to do some research on it. Doink the Clown was on Matt Bourne. Maniac Matt Bourne from a different era was on a radio show, and the first thing he said is that he and Hulk Hogan were actually supposed to wrestle in WrestleMania 9.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, I don't believe that. I mean, just looking back at storylines at the time, I mean, just look at his character. I mean, he wasn't a character that could have done that, and Doink was an excellent character. I think when you go back and look, my wife had never seen Doink before, and she saw Doink recently on the build-up to Raw 1000 in one of the Zack Ryder matches, And I was trying to explain to her that when he debuted, he was an incredible, incredible heel. Yeah. Definitely during the Matt Bourne era, actually. He was an awesome heel. But he wasn't the type of character that could have wrestled Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania. And then he went on about how what a negative person Hogan is. And then honestly, you know, Matt Bourne's had his issues too. I mean, all you have to do is Google Matt Bourne and you can see how he bounced from promotion to promotion. And it wasn't to search out more money. It was usually because he would get fired from another promotion because his behavior or his, you know, his drug abuse or whatever would get him relieved from positions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I imagine Hogan probably wasn't the best guy in the 80s and 90s, David. I mean, when a guy has that much success and he's leading the company and he has to – wrestling's a dog-eat-dog world, and he probably was kind of a dickhead to people under him.
Yeah, and I don't think this is much different than, you know, Brett Favre on the Green Bay Packers or you know, someone who owns a Fortune 500 company. I mean, there's jealousies from people at all levels. And if you're not, like, their running mate and their buddy, they're going to be jealous of you from your position and your power and your money. Now, there's been plenty of stories about Hogan. I'm sure where there's smoke, there's some fire. And I think that Doink here may have some points. But it just, at the end of the day, feels like sour grapes to me.
Well, I mean, you look at Hulk Hogan's, some of the things that he did while he was in World Championship Wrestling. I mean, he's not the best guy in the world.
He's put himself over, right? I mean, you know, he always had creative control, and you know, first of all, Hulk Hogan's going to look good. So if you can work with him with that, you probably got along with him pretty well.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're one of his friends, he didn't want to put Bret Hart over because he felt like he was too small. He likes to get his wins back. I mean, that was always the joke about him bringing Ultimate Warrior back in 1997, is that, you know, he had to get his win back from WrestleMania. I mean, that part I was less offended by, because Hogan's probably a dick, especially in that era. But doing Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, I don't buy that.
Alex, I like to get my wins back, too, so I'm keeping a tally here. I got your number.
Well, we'll just dig you up whenever you retire, and I can beat you a couple more times. Wild card topic number two. Super Dragon recently did a QA with the fans of the Pro Wrestling Guerrilla message board. It was a very insightful look into the company, and I was shocked by his blunt honesty and his transparency. Is this something other companies should consider doing? For those who are unaware, Super Dragon was one of the founders of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, which is one of the largest independent companies in America. They have a high spots DVD distribution deal. And Super Dragon, who is now, for all intents and purposes, one of the main forces behind running the company currently, he's cut zero audio promos, never talked on camera as far as I'm aware. He was a mass wrestler his entire career. He did he went on the message board, and if you typed him out a question, he would answer it. And my name got brought up in it. What's up, Super Dragon? But so I had told a guy, I'd read in Brian Alvarez's newsletter that in 2006, Super Dragon was supposed to win the Battle of Los Angeles. And he got injured, and Davey Richards ended up winning. And someone said, Alex Goff told me this. Is this true? And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm some kind of – anyways. But, yeah, I thought it was very interesting, David. And do you like this approach from independent companies for the management to kind of be transparent and to kind of allow the fans inside of what goes on with running the company, I guess?
I think I do. I go back and forth whether I like the whole kayfabe public persona of these guys and women, or if I like to really know what they're like and the insights into the business. And I like shoot DVDs and shoot interviews and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, like on Twitter, I don't like how some people bounce back and forth between it being in character and, you know, and being themselves. So I almost take it on a case-by-case basis. Because the personality, like Chris Jericho to me, can do whatever he wants and it's entertaining. But in this case with Super Dragon, I like this because certain wrestlers, certain companies should do all they can to generate interest. And this did. It brought fans in. It made Super Dragon a little more accessible, if you will. And I was okay with it. But I don't want people to use these opportunities, these platforms, to make companies look bad. Because sometimes we cross that line. We're like, you were talking about Doink the Clown, you know, criticizing Hogan. Sometimes people do that when they criticize their company, too. And, you know, they try to be glib or funny or whatever and real inside and smart. And I'm not crazy about that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I was going more along the lines of, like, for example, Mike Quackenbush, who's ran Chikara Pro Wrestling forever.
Yeah.
Jim Kettner, who's run the ECWA. We've had Bill Barons on here. There's a lot of questions, a lot of rumors that you hear on the independent wrestling scene that you're just interested in. You know that I bought a book recently, and I read it. It was about how NBC bought built up the must-see TV era. And it had a lot of inside information, had a lot of differing opinions from different people. It's when people are interested in your product, sometimes they do want to know a little bit more inside. It's not going to be everyone, but it's some people. And so I think this is, honestly, I don't see why anyone wouldn't want to do it. You know, they put a gag order now in World Wrestling Entertainment on the writers that leave the company. But fans who are interested in that kind of stuff are going to be interested in some of the inner workings behind the company. And like I said about a company like Chikara, I mean, there's the famed Jay Lethal list of people who can no longer or will no longer get booked by the company. And I think fans would be interested in hearing the how true or false that story is from the source.
Mm-hmm. Last from the past. Jim Ross was honored on this past week's Monday Night Raw. What do you think, Alex, he has meant to the WWE over the years, and did you think the company did enough to honor him?
That specific night, I thought it was nice what they did that night, but I always remember all the years that they embarrassed him. And, yeah, I mean, he was the voice of the company when it was its most successful. So, I mean, Vince McMahon told him he'd always be the voice of WWE. And it kind of goes without saying, because like I said, I mean, he was the guy there when Austin, The Rock, Triple H, all those guys were having their runs on top.
I never really understood, though, why he took that occasional bullying from Vince McMahon and some of the other people there. They almost made it a point to kind of really pick on him, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the things, in my opinion, you know, really crossed the line.
Yeah.
Especially as of recently, Hornswoggle emulating someone who had Bell's palsy. I mean, it's just a lot of uncalled for stuff. And, yeah, that was nice that they celebrated him. And obviously, you know, Jim Ross finds a value in that company because, I mean, just from what they do to him on the screen, I would have found numerous reasons to take my brand elsewhere, to use that phrase. But he didn't. He stayed with the company, and that was nice what they did for him.
I kind of wanted to see some of that, though. I wish some of that would have been on television and not just after the camera stopped rolling.
I assume it would be on World Wrestling Entertainment, the DVD. Seems like they usually put that stuff on there, Ric Flair one. There's a couple of other guys. Paul Heyman and CM Punk are really, really good together. Did I say that earlier, David?
Yes, you did. And they are very good together. And I like the fact that, of course, they've kept Heyman involved on television here, even though Brock Lesnar's not around. One thing I wanted to say, though, I made a note here that Jim Ross is the greatest announcer they've ever had. I don't know if I agree with that because growing up, I used to love, you know, Vince and Jesse, the body together. You know, even Gorilla Monsoon was very, very good with Bobby Heenan and Lord Alfred Hayes. And they had a really good collection of announcers in the 80s, but certainly over the past, I would admit, 25 years plus, he's probably been the greatest wrestling announcer that we've seen. Would you agree?
No. I thought a lot of those guys you named were terrible. Lord Alfred Hayes. Lord, I mean, if you go back and watch those tapes, Lord Alfred Hayes was not very good.
He's fantastic. They were so much like unintentional comedy.
Gorilla Monsoon was notorious for whenever the heel would slap on a submission move. Oh, he won't tap to that. Jim Ross is definitely the best analyst or color commentator the company's ever had. Ever. I mean, ever. He's a lot better than Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, at his age, when he got out of the booth, couldn't keep up with the current style.
Yeah.
And Jim Ross has never had that problem. I mean, Jim Ross has always, and he's always been able to change his style depending on what the company expected from him. If you go back and listen to him in the NWA or WCW, he didn't call matches the same way. He's able to adjust on the fly. Yeah, Jim Ross is excellent. He's the best they've ever had.
can't believe that I work on a radio show where we defame Gorilla Monsoon, Lord Alfred Hayes, that raised me when I was a child. This is just upsetting to me.
You know, Jesse had his moments. Jesse Ventura, I mean, he definitely had his moments.
Great.
Yeah, he definitely had his moments. But yeah, but no one's been better. And they all serve different roles as well. But yeah, Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, when he was really good, them as a team, they in my opinion, were probably the best commentating team WWE ever had.
Interesting. Well, this is normally when we wrap the show. Alex, I got something on my mind here. Would you mind if I just took a minute of your time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen these ads for Ruby Tuesdays where they've kind of rebranded their restaurant and they say that, you know, here it's all good? Have you seen these?
No, I think because I'm not in a Ruby Tuesday market, but sure.
All right, well, Ruby Tuesdays has rebranded themselves, and it's all good here, Alex. They claim that you can have a dining experience there you can't have anywhere else. Apparently, they've never been to Applebee's. But the Ruby Tuesdays, literally in Ashburn, Virginia, right up the street from where I live, just went out of business. Closed. It's gone. And it's like, how can a Ruby Tuesdays in a neighborhood that's 95% families go out of business? That's just not good. And it reminded me how difficult the restaurant business can be, how tough it is to be successful, because Ruby Tuesdays is one of those restaurants that people can take children to. It's not overly expensive. You don't have to be dressed up to go there. And, you know, if Ruby Tuesdays in an area where I live can't make it, you know, it's just a bad sign. Of course, there's plenty of other restaurants ready to jump in there. I had a friend, Alex, growing up who his father owned several restaurants. In fact, Jamie, you've met Jamie. And I bussed tables for his dad one night, and I knew I never wanted to do that again. It was very, very hard. His dad worked very hard managing those restaurants. And it's just, you know, that's why whenever I go to a restaurant, I never complain about the food. I never, you know, complain about the service because, God, I never want to work in that industry, either owning a restaurant or working in the wait staff. So I just thought that was pretty shocking that, you know, it's all good here is their slogan, and it's apparently not all good here.
Speaking of going out of business, 30 for 30, Volume 2, they're calling us back on the air. First documentary that aired this past Tuesday was Broke, which featured NFL, Major League Baseball, and NBA players who have gone broke, filed for bankruptcy, and how that happens. I learned a ton from it, which one thing is don't open up a restaurant. Not even a McDonald's, which I would assume would be a successful restaurant, but apparently the rate of return on a McDonald's, even because of the franchise fees that they have to recoup, You kind of lose you lose money for a few years. Do you think that this documentary will have an effect on any new talent coming up, I guess?
Well, no, I don't, because you would think that the people who in the 70s made mistakes would impact the 80s, the 80s, the 90s. This is just a problem people have that aren't very intelligent at times. They get into something where they're making more money than they ever thought they would see, and the trappings of fame just overwhelm them. I don't think this will have an effect. If anything, I think athletes think it can never happen to them.
When the lottery got to be really, really high, I bought a lottery ticket, and my wife and I had a legitimate conversation about what we would do, and then one of the things that we discussed is, you know, buying houses for both of our parents, you know, or at least paying the current ones off, and because family is something that's important to us. But what's funny is that that's one of the things that a lot of athletes do, and that's what gets a lot of them into trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, it definitely educated me. So, David, whenever I make my first $20 million, I don't think I'm going broke.
No, yeah, exactly. And I'm certainly not buying my wife's mom a house. she's standing right here, so I thought I would throw that in. Anyway, listen, we're going to wrap this up. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Alex, before we go, I need a World Series prediction. Give me two teams.
Washington Nationals and the Texas Rangers.
Interesting. I'm going to go Atlanta Braves against the Detroit Tigers. Until next time, I am David.
And this is Alex.
We hope you've enjoyed the program, and as my friend Jesse the Body Ventura would have said, the pleasure's been all yours.